and welcome to this bonus episode of University, a podcast series from the University of Southampton. I'm Jo Fisher, and in this one-off episode, I'm joined by Professor David Martin to discuss Census 2021. David is a Professor of Geography within the School of Geography and Environmental Science. His research looks at geographic information systems and automated cartography. David has worked with the Office of National Statistics and has helped design the census framework that is being used today. You could say he's a bit of a celebrity in the census world. We met earlier this month for a virtual cuppa to discuss in detail some of the themes this year's census will reflect, the historical importance of the survey, and its transition to an online platform. It's brilliant to have you here with me today, David. Would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
My name's Dave Martin, and I'm a professor in geography and environmental science. I've been at the university since 1992, which now feels an astonishing long time.
And before we get into the nitty-gritty of today's podcast episode, can I ask if you have a cup of tea?
It's coffee, actually. Is that allowed?
That's fine. That's allowed. We've had quite a few coffee drinkers on the podcast before. So that
latte is in the staff club in the olden days. I didn't have to ask for a latte because when they saw me coming, they would get it ready.
You're a regular. They knew exactly what your usual order was.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Okay, great. So we're here today to talk about your research and specifically, I think, the census, which is coming up very soon. Would you mind just giving a bit of information about sort of the technical side of what you do, what your research entails, and your interests in an academic frame of mind?
Sure. So the census is a huge operation coming up 21st of March, an attempt to count everybody in the country and to learn a lot about the social and economic conditions of the country. And as a geographer, I have always been fascinated in mapping populations, maps of places, maps of neighbourhoods. And over the years, really going right back to my own PhD, I've always been working on trying to make better maps of population. Okay. And fairly early on in that, right back kind of around about 1991, I started to work with census data and think, how can we produce more useful maps of census? Mm. And then from 2001 onwards, I've actually been very much involved with the Office of National Statistics in developing methods they can use, which help to enhance the way that census works itself. So I use the data. Mm. I'm fascinated by it. But actually a strand of my work has become in the, if you like, the design of the process by which it gets created. Okay. And then going into all the many complexities that that entails.
I think people, including myself, might forget about how much work goes into preparing things like this and quite how much data is collected. So what sort of goes into the preparations for something like the census? What sort of things do you have to develop and how did you get into it specifically?
So I suppose it's worth just saying it as a big picture. Census in England and Wales is carried out by the Office for National Statistics just down the road in Titchfield.
Okay.
So they're not very far from us. And there's plenty of people at Uni of Southampton who are involved in one way or another with that process. Mm. And they're the National Statistical Agency that produce inflation data, COVID data, population data, migration data. So a huge range of core national information. But the census is your one hit to attempt to count everybody and get a really detailed picture of social characteristics. And actually, they will have been working on the 2021 census in earnest, probably back since about 2014.
Okay.
So really only about 3 or 4 years after the previous census. Because the process of working out what you're going to ask people, how it's going to be delivered, which we'll come into. So with the census we're about to do is the first time it's been digital first with the expectation we're all doing it online.
Okay.
Exactly the question set, the way in which the operation is going to run, how many people are going to be employed, how you're going to organise it. It's a huge task that gets rehearsed sort of incrementally. Mm. And eventually the process has to be approved by Parliament before it can sort of be put into place. Mm. My own involvement really goes back to the mid-90s. Gosh, I'm feeling old talking to you. I had some study leave. I'd come to the university and the first opportunity that I had to have some study leave. Mm. And I got in touch with people that I knew over at ONS in Titchfield and said, any chance of a desk I could borrow in the corner of a room and I'll work on something that you're interested in too. And I went over and started looking at their first implementation of what we call a geographic information system. And I effectively sat down and programmed an alternative way of doing the areas, okay, which are the small areas that all the data get published for, while I was sitting there on study leave. And they liked it. And we had quite a lot of to and fro about persuading them to do things differently. I used to sit down and use a lot of basically paper maps and coloured pens and things that far back. And I effectively devised a system that became the prototype for all the areas used in 2001.
Okay, amazing.
And they have then gone on and got used in many other things.
It sounds like you've been a huge influence on the whole process, and it's obviously, you know, impacted a lot more than the census itself. But so effectively the census we'll be taking part in this year is something that you helped to develop in the way that it is today.
Yeah, and I'm only one little bit of a huge jigsaw, really important to stress that. I mean, it might be worth explaining a little further what the output area stuff is all about. So you will get a postcard inviting you to fill in a census form, okay, and it'll have an access code on it. It'll say you can go online and do it here for this spring. Mm. But effectively, all of that is built from a big list of the addresses in the country.
Okay.
And one of the things that's very important about census is that the responses you give are confidential. They don't go out to other government departments and are not shared within government. Your responses on your form actually remain confidential for 100 years. Mm-hmm. But it's important that the data are usable by people in government, by academics, businesses. Everybody wants to learn about the small areas, to learn about how one neighbourhood differs from another. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our understanding, for example, about deprivation, things that we know about differences in COVID rates are to do with knowing which areas have got high concentrations of the elderly, how different ethnic groups are distributed. And the building blocks for the whole of that are areas called output areas that have about 300 people in them. And so the whole country is divided up into those small areas, and they're carefully constructed so that no area is too small that the data make people identifiable, but they're all small enough that you can do useful things with them.
Okay.
And it's that trade-off between staying confidential and having local detail, which is absolutely at the heart of the output area design work, which I originally did. And they've been built up into other things, so that if you go onto Public Health England's website now and you look at the detailed COVID data, they're in units called middle layer super output areas, and they're just basically built up from the stuff we started in 2001.
We're all very familiar with sort of maps nowadays of COVID rates and sort of how areas are defined and mapped out and things like that. So it's really interesting to know that it's all linked up and all very much a similar sort of process and sort of way of working things out. So that's, and it's familiar, so we'll be able to remember that when we're thinking about how the census works as well. And I mean, you've touched upon it briefly then, saying about how we can understand a bit more about our country, but why is the census so important and why should we all be taking part in it?
It's not too difficult to work out roughly how many people there are in the country from quite a few different sources. So you can look at the number of people registered with the National Health Service, for example. It's not a perfect list, but it's a good approximation for most places and most people. There's a few people missing, there's some extra people. But it tells you how many people you've got. But it won't tell you reliably about ethnicity. It won't tell you much at all about how they live together in families. It doesn't tell you what jobs they do. So there are stacks of things which census asks us, which allow us to work out the detail of how people's household structures are changing, how people of different ethnicities may be employed in different industries, how that's concentrated in different neighbourhoods. And it gets used in a huge variety of ways. So at one level, the allocation of resources from central government to local authorities. You might find that the mix of goods down on your local supermarket, I shan't name any, but you know, whichever, whether it's Portswood High Street or over in Totten or wherever you choose to go out to Hedge End, the mix of goods on the shelves will have been in part determined by that supermarket looking at the people in the neighbourhood and how their spending patterns have changed.
Oh, wow.
And the basic demographics which come into services like that, all from census. Same with predicting future school places or looking at hospital bed places that should be provided, because if anywhere you're trying to adapt a service to a population, census is your core reference point.
Wow, I had no idea it sort of impacted quite up to that kind of minute kind of detail about what products you can buy and things like that. It impacts everyday life. You you've mentioned COVID because it's inescapable, unfortunately, and comes up in every podcast episode because it's daily life at the moment, sadly. But it's going to be a really unusual year to do the census in. So my first question when I knew I'd be speaking to you today was, why haven't we done what Scotland has done and decided to postpone? Why are we going ahead with a census this year when things are still very abnormal?
The answer to that is, as you'd expect, a very complex one. Mm. So it's worth mentioning that the census is in Scotland and Northern Ireland, and then England and Wales together are three separate operations that take place at the same time, because the census is a devolved matter. It's got legislation that's separate to the devolved administrations. And so they each have to make their own decision. And quite early last year, when it was obvious that we were all in lockdown and the immediate future looked quite uncertain, each of the nations was looking at how far they'd already invested in the census process and how much of the money had already been spent, because clearly government's not going to pay twice.
Okay.
What the need for the information was, and of course, actually, our need for some of that information is more acute now than it's ever been. And there was a certainty that Brexit was going to change all sorts of things in the labour market. It's going to affect migration internationally. And so there's a really pressing need for good baseline data about some of those things. And each country then had to make a decision as to whether the decision is go or no go. Not, this is not something that happened at Christmas. These are decisions, in a sense, that were made back in the middle of last year. There was no chance to change the questions because that had all gone through Parliament back again early last year with the white paper from 2018. So England, Wales and Northern Ireland all decided that effectively they were so far through the process and the need for the data was so pressing that it was better to go ahead, not least with a digital census in which for many people you'd be able to do it sitting at home using any kind of device. It didn't involve interaction with other people. Scotland were probably slightly less advanced with the process. Okay. And if you like, with a smaller, leaner operation that was less tied into other things. And so they possibly wisely, time will tell, said, OK, we'll wait and do it in 2022, which is interestingly what Republic of Ireland have decided to do as well.
And I bet in a way it will be interesting to look back at this data as well in the future, coming from such a very specific time in history, because this will have a huge impact in how we live our lives going forward for many years. So it may be that there's a benefit to doing it at such a strange time, as well as sort of the issues that might come up.
There's definitely some benefits and some problems that we can anticipate right now. So clearly with Brexit, one of the things everybody's interested in has been the impact on migration. And one of the main ways that we used to understand migration in and out of the UK was through the International Passenger Survey, which was a survey conducted at the borders, literally a sample of passengers going through airports, going through a Channel Tunnel, going through major ports, which had to be discontinued last spring because of all the COVID restrictions. So literally at the moment where everybody in the country is crying out for a really clear understanding of how many people moved, how many international students did not come, how many European migrants, people working in the UK, may have gone back short-term or long-term to other places in Europe, we stopped the instrument that we were doing a lot of the measurement from. So census gives an opportunity to do a recount and, if you like, recalibrate the system, which is a big driver for doing it now. But there are things that we ask that are going to be very challenging. There's a question on census that says, where do you work? The question can't be changed, but ONS have had to rewrite the guidance to make it clear that what they want to do is to if people to answer what is the circumstance right now, and written some guidance that says if you're on furlough, still count yourself as employed because we assume you're going back there. It's going to be a question for our students as well. It's been hard to predict exactly which location will they be at their term time address, or will they be at a home address. And so again, the guidance has to be rewritten that says if you've got a term time address where you would expect to be spending the time, please answer it as for that place.
Okay.
Because we're trying to capture, you know, not exactly what happens on the 21st of March, but what would be the normal circumstances on that day.
If the questions are set sort of 2 years in advance, which they are, then we had no idea this would ever happen. You could never have predicted this. From your sort of experience with data, do you have any sort of ideas of what could come out of this census or how it might change from the last census we had in 2011?
This census will ask a couple of new questions as well, which will be very interesting ones.
Okay.
So for the first time, there's a question about gender identity. For the first time in England and Wales, there's a question about whether people have previously served in the armed forces, because there's an armed forces commitment to be able to provide services for people who've previously served the country in that way. And actually, it's quite hard to identify the neighbourhoods and groups that are affected and what their needs are. And there's also, for the first time, two variables that are going to come in by linking some government administrative data. And that's about the number of rooms in the house, because actually we've got a pretty good understanding of that from the address. It's good property information, so we don't have to ask people how many rooms are in your house. And also, people for a long time have wished that census data had an income question. It's a very sensitive thing to ask people. And so what we're going to do is that ONS will make, if you like, a careful match, not at the person level, but at the small area in the household level, to be able to show us something about the income distribution alongside the other census data sets. So we're going to have some quite important new strands in the census data that address contemporary questions that we couldn't do 10 years ago. And there is always that challenge. So whenever you do a census, there's a big group of people who want to ask exactly the same questions as last time, so you can see what's changed. Mm. Another big group of people who really love to ask really contemporary questions because they're helpful now. And it's a trade-off. It's always a trade-off between the two.
Mm. Is that something you added every single time, or is it sort of, does it come in fits and starts?
So that issue is perennial. It's always the issue, but the specific topics are unique to the period. So we only asked about ethnicity for the first time in 1991.
Wow, okay.
And in the past, questions about your household amenities would have included, 1981 was asking if there was an inside toilet in your house. Whereas now there's a question about type of central heating.
Of course.
Because actually we're much more interested about energy use and our expectation of what's normal has changed. But there's always been an interest in, if you like, the standard of housing. But what's meaningful to ask people to try and get hold of that has changed as time moves on. And so it's one of the fascinating things. It's not a purely self-defining set of questions. It's negotiated between government, major users of the data, people who feel that things should or shouldn't be asked. And that's rehearsed every time.
It sounds like the census itself is quite a good indication of how times change and how society changes, as well as the data you get from it, which is really interesting.
Really, very much so.
Yeah, really interesting. How much does politics in general impact the census as well? Because we've obviously seen a sort of one main governing party for a period of time.
Yeah, I mean, this is we're going to be measuring a decade of austerity, essentially. Mm. And so there's an opportunity in you know, the period 2011, it's not perfectly aligned with, you know, the economic crash and changing policies, but it's effectively looking at a decade of austerity type policies. And we know from lots of different survey-based work and lots of detailed studies that don't cover the whole population how different groups have been affected by that. There's much debate about the way in which different kinds of inequalities have widened, about housing shortage, difficulties of people. In a sense, there's a north-south angle to that. There's a regional angle to that. There's a how does it affect different neighbourhoods in different cities. And only when you get the kind of comprehensive coverage from census can you drill down into it in all the different ways. So people who perhaps quite reasonably don't spend much time thinking about these things think, oh, well, we do surveys. Surely you can find out the answer from a survey. However big the survey you do, maybe you run a survey and you've got 10 or 20,000 respondents, it will give you broad patterns and you can ask very specific questions. But it's then very, very difficult to say, what does that mean for Hampshire? Or what does that mean for Wales? Because Hampshire and Wales will have very few respondents in a survey of that size, even if it's a big one. And it equally is difficult to say, what does that mean for members of a particular ethnic community? Because they're very small numbers. And the unique thing about census when we attempt to count everybody is that you're dealing almost with the whole number and you can cut it in so many different ways and understand the relationships. So you know, there's going to be a huge amount of interest in what the traceable effects of austerity for a decade are and how different groups have been affected. Okay. And census is, in some sense, it's confirmatory. We might have studies along the way that tell us the direction we think it's going, but this is your chance to measure it for everybody.
the census data and things, it directly impacts the research that maybe goes on in within your team and your department. The research can be used by our scientists and researchers to make progress in areas of great interest and with projects, and that's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are others, in a sense, who are more focused on using those data. So we've got the SRC Centre for Population Change over in Social Sciences. You know, understanding this stuff is really crucial to many of the things that are core to their work. In social statistics, we've got a lot of people who are fascinated and an expert on the linkage of administrative data of various kinds and trying to understand whether in the future we could update some of these census information or the census type information much more frequently by getting better methods by which government could use data that we collect routinely and start to improve the intercensal information so that you didn't have to do something quite so big every 10 years. Maybe you could do something smaller more often. So there's plenty of people in Southampton who are interested, pretty central in this, either as methodologists or as analysts. But I suppose it's just worth saying that there's lots of groups who use it just for one thing. And it may be that in other areas, their main research looks very, very different. So in the last month or so, I've had a conversation with people within the university who are interested in safe flight routes for drones. Okay. It matters whether you're flying over people's heads. You want population data. There are people concerned with environmental justice and whether or not actually only the least advantaged groups are situated in the areas which are most prone to flooding or industrial pollution. The focus of the science in those cases is somewhere completely different, but the distribution of population comes in surprisingly frequently.
Yeah.
And I would say this, of course, as a social scientist, that the science has got to be situated in the social science if we want to really understand how it works.
Yeah. And you mentioned how the data isn't openly available for about 100 years after the census takes place. So I couldn't, for example, go in and find out any answers to this year's census until 2121. That's my level of maths for you.
Very good.
very, very shameful. But people like yourself or the government and local bodies and the people who need to use the data to inform decisions, they can access it sooner than that?
Not about you as an individual.
Okay.
This is really important. So what you type in or write in on your census form, you'll be able to do it on paper or digitally. If you like, the responses on your piece of paper, if we can call it that, remain confidential for 100 years. And family historians and genealogists are getting excited about the 1921 census right now.
I bet, yeah.
Because you can go back and you can look at those early 20th century censuses and see what people wrote and who was filling in the form and the names of the individuals. What happens from the modern census, so from 2021... over the next year or so, is that a whole series of different data products get constructed, which are anonymous but detailed in different ways. So one of them, there's a data set which is lots of information about small areas, so the output areas we talked about, with lots and lots of, so you can understand how different people of different ages are employed in different occupations, for example. And anybody can have that data. It's open data. It will be published on the web.
Okay.
It's open government licensed. You can do research with it, publish it, make maps from it. There's some samples of anonymized records where, if you like, what you put on your form gets encoded so that your individual response is not present, but showing that you're in a particular age group and you live in a flat and you've got two cars available and there are four people in the household can be seen as an individual record. But we won't know what area it is. It might say it's in the south of England or it's in the southeast region. That's very useful to analysts because you can cut those data and look at household structures and the ways in which variables fit together.
Mm.
And then there is also some secure access where researchers can gain approved researcher status to work with still anonymized, but more detailed versions of the data.
We've touched upon how COVID will impact this census already, but has something like this happened before where a census has sort of taken place in quite a turbulent or problematic period of time?
So two come to mind, the most recent modern ones. Actually, in 2001, there was a foot and mouth epidemic going on at just the time when the census was being taken. And it was a bigger problem in some ways than the if you like, a bigger physical problem. Okay. Because in 2001, there was a lot more interaction in terms of enumerators going and delivering and collecting census forms, as opposed to the post person delivering a postcard with an online access code. Mm. And so in some rural areas of the UK, it was very difficult to conduct the census field work. And there had to be a lot of kind of very hasty replanning and liaison with local authorities to allow people who were living in rural communities that were effectively limiting traffic in and out, so that that part of census could still be reconstructed. So that's probably the most recent example. Yeah. And in 1941, we didn't have the census because the Second World War was on. And what had happened was that government at the time had realised that it really needed core population information, not least because there was probably going to be conscription and we needed to understand the workforce and some core characteristics for a whole host of wartime planning functions. And so they did an emergency population registration in 1939, which it kind of counted people, got the basic demographic characteristics and the employment that people were in. Just a very limited question set done a couple of years ahead of the cycle. And then obviously there was no census enumeration in 1941. So we've got one that's missing and one that was disrupted, but not in the same way that this will be. But the technologies, even in 2001, look completely different in terms of what we were expecting. Nobody could fill a census in online in 2001.
Of course, absolutely. And that's going to be a huge sort of positive, I suppose, this year, is the online capacity and how we can all complete the census while staying at home, staying safe and you know, wherever we may be in the world. So is that going to be a huge benefit, and how will it compare to sort of, was it available online last time?
Yes, it was available, but it wasn't pushed. Okay. So 16% of the population in England, Wales, I think, completed their census online in 2011. But it wasn't, there was no big publicity about it. There was some small print that said, if you want to, you could do this form online. I did mine online so I could keep the form and that I could take some screenshots of my online census form to use in lectures for the next decade. So I'm not sure what I'll do this time, but it was available, but it wasn't a major channel. What we find is there's a big upside and a big downside. The big upside is that you generally get better census responses that need less post-processing if they're collected online, because you can use an online form to guide someone through the process. So if there are only three people in your household and you're doing it online, you only need to present the person questions three times over. Whereas if you look at a big form and you're living on your own and you've got a form that's big enough to fill in five people's worth of data, it looks a bit overwhelming. And also the online can check for really basic things to start with, so that you don't say that your three-year-old daughter is a mechanical engineer because you put the answer in the wrong column.
Yeah.
So online is great in that respect. It collects good data quickly. But the big challenge is digital disadvantage. Effectively, people who are either unable to engage with the form, don't have a suitable device, don't do online. And obviously, that impacts particularly on the elderly, but not exclusively so. And so a lot of the effort for 2021 has gone into, if you like, a differential model, which is there to allow everybody to have paper if they need it. And neighbourhoods where we know that there will be a lot of elderly people, or a lot of people for other reasons, we don't think they'll respond online, or the internet connectivity is very poor, will get a paper form straight off. And anybody else could request one. So it's a mixed model with a lot of effort having gone into the field support for people who need to do it on paper, and a lot of pre-engineering into the support for the hopefully three quarters of the population that would do it online. And that's not an unreasonable expectation, because looking at recent experience in New Zealand and Canada, they have managed that kind of, you know, it's of the order of three quarters of the response online. It's not guaranteed that it works like that, but it's entirely achievable. Because we've got reference countries who've managed it.
The past year, we've obviously relied even more so on the internet than before, even, you know, with our usage being high in the first place. So it's obviously highlighted gaps where people might not have access to the internet, might not be able to access the internet, or may not have access to devices. So I think it's excellent that that's been considered. And obviously the data that you'll have from previous censuses means that you know which, as you say, which areas are more likely to be impacted. Real change is happening. It's a real opportunity to make a difference and be a part of change. And your involvement, obviously, on a personal level throughout your career is brilliant. And it must be a really exciting time for you now that it's eventually rolled around again and you can see it sort of unfold at this very strange time. So
yeah. I'm kind of very loosely on my fourth census, if you count that. I was really, really starting on the first one in 91.
Have you had a favourite year?
Probably 2001, because all of the output area stuff was completely new, which was very exciting.
This may well overtake if it is of interest, you know, with all the different changes and things. So I hope it's an enjoyable time for you, an exciting time for you, and you know, what comes out of it sort of helps you continue with your research and your work and makes change possible in the next few years. It's very exciting. It's been brilliant hearing about your work over the last few decades and the censuses that you've been involved with, the impact that you've had and your team has had, you know, on how the census has developed and why it is the way it is today. So thank you so much for joining me today to talk about it. I have a final question, actually. If someone is considering maybe not filling out the census, or they're not completely sure why it matters and why it's important, what sort of a simple phrase would you say to them to kind of convince them that it's vital and it's important?
I mean, I would just say that if you want to count, if you want to be counted and sort of your identity to be represented, then fill it in, be part of the community, because it's only a once in a decade opportunity to get that stuff right.
Of course, once in a decade, it makes it sound even more sort of impressive than it is. And I've learned an awful lot. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, David, for joining me today for this bonus episode of University for Census 2021. For more information about the census and David's work, just visit our website. In the meantime, you can catch up on the first and second series of University at any time, wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm Jo Fisher, and thank you for listening. This has been a podcast from the University of Southampton.